With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Out, choose a black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land, boil the sea, you can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can see, since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Out there in conservative radio land, you are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the most corrupt imperial city in the history of mankind.
And this is Tex dialing in from Central Texas. So how are you doing tonight, Rex?
Well, I think I'm a little fired up because I think that this is one of those rare golden opportunities for people who actually want to conserve the liberal principles that are encoded and enshrined in our founding documents, chiefly the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, because it looks like the corporatist, Keynesian, imperialist fallacy is in its later stages and falling down around their ears, from your imperial president stating that all these scandals are, quote, phony scandals, to the Republicans telling you that you're not a patriot unless you're willing to be spied upon in order to be secure. It just seems that the overreach is so dramatic that it's coming down around their ears. And this is the chance for us to really do something for the Constitution, for liberty, and chiefly on the federal level, that's going to have to be, unfortunately, in the Republican Party. and I think that this Republican Party, remember, Tex, they did that after the they lost spectacularly in 2012 with Roe's Monster, they did that autopsy. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think it turned out that the creature would have won if it only had a brain.
Yeah, I think, but I mean, the thing that I found amazing about that is, isn't an autopsy a post-mortem exam? So
usually the creature's dead, usually when you do an autopsy.
Right, so it seems to me that Priebus and the RNC and all those other douchebags are pretty much, I think they acknowledge that the Republican Party died in 2012, and as far as I'm concerned, good riddance. Now, again, you know, what does that mean? I mean, you know, do you have to save the Republican Party? Do you have to destroy it? Well, you know, and Tex, you and I have talked about this before, you know, our founding fathers didn't care much for factions or what we call today parties. But, you know, that's the reality of it. People are, you know, herd animals, so we tend to coalesce in groups, and so it's kind of an inevitability. But is the Democrat Party today the same as the party of, you know, Van Buren and Jackson? I don't think so. Is today's Republican Party the same as the party of Lincoln or the party of Coolidge or the party of Reagan? No. These things go through permutations and incarnations and changes, and, you know, they're just shells and organizations that become whatever the leadership and the membership make them. Well, clearly, you know, this Republican Party, the H.W. Bush, Dole, McShame, Romney Party is dead. I just think some of them haven't realized it yet. And, you know, the question is, do we let it stay dead and deal with the Democrat-Communist ascendancy for the next 40 years, or do we take over this structure and make it conservative/libertarian once again?
This reminds me of that speech on other people's money. It's like, this company is dead. Don't blame me. It was dead when I got here. But that's exactly what the Republican Party is. I mean, the thing is, nobody seems to have told the media, but even Republican voters are pretty much given up on the thing. If you go talk to them, they hate it. And they're like, well, we hate your leadership. They hate where the party's going. They're screwed over just as bad as everyone else, but nobody knows where else to go. So, yeah, the GOP pretty much is dead, and so it's up to us to find out if we're going to revitalize this thing or find something else. And, of course, given the way elections work here in the U.S., it's probably easier to just take this thing over and revitalize it. And there's, you know, all the hints of, you know, attempts to control or really attempts to maintain control of the party on the part of the leadership, which is intent on taking the party in a direction absolutely doesn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why they continue to lose, but they continue to enrich themselves at the expense of the party. So, you know, they'll continue to, you know, to make sure that the party's on life support, because that's really what they want. But, you know, we're seeing some of that in the crossfire we saw this week between Chris Christie and, well, it wasn't really return fire, but with Chris Christie to Rand Paul. And my first thought was, who's Chris Christie again? Let's see.
Chris Christie is, I think that's Obama's pet Republican.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Isn't he like, he's heading to Paul Ryan country. Whatever happened to that guy? He like disappeared. His poll numbers went way down. His positives are down to nothing. Nobody likes Paul Ryan anymore. You know, Chris Christie is intent on getting into that Paul Ryan country, you know.
So, mini Mitt Romney?
yeah, exactly. So, you know, I don't know why Chris Christie wanted to pick this fight that is going to strike a blow for empire and remind everybody that we do need to invade every place on planet Earth. And, you know, we do need to turn your offspring into soldiers and go send them to die in some godforsaken hellhole for some cause that nobody knows, understands, or cares about. You know, well, I don't know. I'll just get into it a little bit. He's like, oh, I'd like to have anybody who talks about isolationism. I don't think we're talking about isolationism. I think we're just talking about, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do any of this crap unless we have a national interest at stake or a vital national interest. Oh, well, you can't say we don't have one in Afghanistan. That's where Bin Laden was.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that guy,
right.
That guy's been, okay, so.
We killed him three times over. I think we're okay there.
Yeah, I think he's okay. And he's like, well, I'd like to. They talk about this stuff, but I'd like to have them sit across some of the orphans that, oh, now we're throwing orphans out there. Way to go, Chris Christie. Every cheap shot in the book, you know. Go talk to some of the orphans whose family died on 9/11 and explain to them why we can be isolationists. Okay, I'd like you to go talk to some of the orphans of the 83 Americans who were killed this year in 2013 in Afghanistan after Bin Laden's dead, why they don't have any relatives here. They don't have, you know, parents anymore, because we're doing what in Afghanistan again? Why are we there? What is the purpose?
Nobody knows anymore. But Tex, since you bring it up, I do have 3 minutes of Chris Christie running his mouth, you know, about this stuff, and it's a very Alinskyite speech. It's all emotion, finger pointing, accusations, shouting. and guilt. You know, we're being guilted by the memory of the survivors and the relatives of the deceased of 9/11, which because of that we should be completely okay with being spied upon, with shredding the Constitution, and with sending our young men and women all over the world to build an empire for an elite as opposed to defending the United States. So if you want to hear it,
of
I got
course.
3 minutes of Christie actually stating it, and he addresses all those things you bring up. I think it's pretty good for everybody to hear it, but go ahead.
I absolutely agree. I would love to hear it, and I just, before we start, I think you can sum it up really quick. If this had a title, it would be, Americans died on 9/11. That's why you can't have rights anymore. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great way to sum it up. I would agree with you. And so we'll be back on the other side of this three-minute clip. Probably bring on at that point Captain Caveman for his commentary on it too. But I think the important thing here is that this clip, and as you're listening to it, I want you to pay attention, everybody. This is they're drawing a line in the sand, and they are using emotion to push you over to the far side. They're telling you that liberty, the Constitution, civil rights, freedom, these things are not important to us as Americans. What is important to us as Americans is kicking the crap out of everybody in the world and giving up all of our freedom here at home in order to reach for this brass ring of security. And so just listen to his words, and then we'll dissect it on the other side of this. It's about 3 minutes long.
And so, and on the libertarianism side of things, I, as a former prosecutor and who was appointed by President George W. Bush on September 10th, 2001, I just want us to be really cautious. Because this strain of libertarianism that's going through both parties right now and making big headlines, I think is a very dangerous thought. President Obama has done nothing to change the policies of the Bush administration in the war on terrorism, and I mean practically nothing. And you know why? Because they work. Because they work. And I think what we have a country has to decide is, do we have amnesia? Because I don't. And I remember what we felt like on September 12th, 2001. And have there been some mistakes made over the course of time? Of course, because it's human beings and their judgment calls. There have been some mistakes made. But I want to say that I think both the way President Bush conducted himself and the way President Obama has conducted himself in the main on those type of decisions hasn't been different because they were right and because we haven't had another one of those attacks that cost thousands and thousands of lives. And as the governor now of a state that lost the second most people on 9/11 behind the state of New York,
right,
and still seeing those families, John,
right,
I love all these esoteric debates that people are getting in.
Senator Rand Paul, for example.
Well, listen, you can name any number of people who've engaged in it, and he's one of them. I mean, these esoteric intellectual debates, I want them to come to New Jersey and sit across from the widows and the orphans and have that conversation. And they won't, because that's a much tougher conversation to have. So as a country, and whoever's the leader of this country...
The response to Obama being in the White House, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
This drift towards authoritarianism?
No, I don't think so, but I think he started to cause it. I don't think it's in reaction to him, but he had a lot of rhetoric in 2008. He was going to close Guantanamo. He was going to stop this. He was going to stop that. And I remember I used to say to Mary Pat all the time, as somebody who had top secret clearance, I said, when he sits in that chair and starts to hear those briefings, his tune's going to change fast. And it has. And so for those of us who are on the front line of it, in the years after that, the U.S. attorneys, the FBI, the CIA, the people who are on the front line of trying to keep this country safe, I just say it's not a debate not worth having. But I think we need to be very cautious about how joyful we are over the idea that somehow we're going to shift this baby way back, because the next attack that comes that kills thousands of Americans as a result, people are going to be looking back on the people who are having this intellectual debate.
So apparently things like the Fourth Amendment – the U.S. Constitution, the right to be secure in your personal papers and due process before you're deprived of life, liberty, or property is just an esoteric conversation, according to Chris Christie. What do you think of that, Tex? Does it feel esoteric to you when you realize that the NSA is grabbing all your friggin' data, that the police are snapshotting your license plate at every corner, that there's a camera and determining what time you take a piss and when you go to the grocery store and when you go get your hemorrhoids checked at the doctor's office? I mean, is this really esoteric?
Well, this reminds me of you might even call this Chris Christie's temporary privileges speech. Remember George Carlin was giving a thing about he was doing some stand-up comedy. He was talking about rights, and everybody believes they have rights. He says, but all you've got are temporary privileges, right? And what Chris Christie just said is all you have are temporary privileges. I mean, there's so much. I mean, it's a three-minute thing, but there's so much conceit in it. And it really, it's densely packed with just things that are incredible that it's really worth talking about. So, for instance, well, first he's like, oh, everyone has amnesia, but I remember, yo recuerdo, you know, I remember, you don't, you know, we all remember, we were all there, right? We don't remember signing away at all of our rights, though. We remember what happened on 9/11, and remember we wanted to go get them, but we also remember that we got them, and we're still in Afghanistan, and we don't really know why. So maybe it's time to go. Like, okay, we got that guy, and you know, somebody else starts setting up terrorist bases someplace. We have a conversation about, hey, I think they're setting up another terrorist base. Remember how we let bin Laden travel around the world there for about 10 years before we ever did anything about it? Maybe next time we don't let him travel around. Like, hey, this guy keeps moving all over the place. He says he's going to attack us. I say, you know, we go fire some missiles and destroy his base camp, and then that way we don't have to wait for this to happen again. That's a conversation you could have. I don't see what we're getting by being in Afghanistan. And then he talks about some mistakes have been made. Oh, some mistakes. Was recording all of our conversations and every email we ever sent and text and chat and everything. There was just like a mistake, like, oh, I didn't know I did that. It's such a mistake. I recorded everything. Turns out I got a record of everything without a warrant, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that the NSA director said,
the nines over here in the government. I don't know, but now we got everything, so.
Well, the NSA director said that they don't intentionally spy on all Americans. So, you know, they don't intentionally do it. It's just completely accidental that they managed to snap all our data and download it into Utah 5 zettabytes worth. Just an accident.
They were the most surprised when they came to work that day and they were like, holy crap, we've got everyone's information again today. How did that happen? Why does this happen like every day? How is this happening? Who is doing this? Is this a prank?
I mean, if it's the government agency, I might believe you.
Exactly.
That is possible.
I mean, here but I've got everything again. I don't know. I think it's Joe. Yeah. He's retiring soon. I think he's playing pranks on me because I'm about to be promoted. So, but anyway, so it's some mistakes. I like that. You know, so he papers over all of that. But then he said, when Obama got in a ascended to the presidency or became president or whatever you want to call it, he's like, he saw the light.
Yeah.
And he understood the importance. You know, I just don't think that's the case. And I think I could probably prove it by his actions. He came and he promised he was going to do some sets of things, not all of which I agreed with. But he came and he said he was going to do a whole range of things. Then he came to office and he did sort of none of them in foreign policy, just complete 180-degree turn. I think he wimped out. That's what
he
did. Because
he made us look like complete pussies to the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. I think if he had seen the light and realized that, you know, what we were actually dealing with, which is what Chris Christie is saying, he's like, oh, well, you know, Barack Obama went up there and he understood the problem and he became a hawk, right? So that's kind of the subtext of Chris Christie's statement, if you listen to it. It's like Obama went in, he got the briefing, and Obama, like, jumped up from his chair. He's like, oh, my God, we have to go get these guys at all costs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's what happened. Obama was like, oh, that sounds really hard. Like, I don't want to go fight the whole military. Well, whatever, I'll send it to my people, and maybe they'll do something about it. anyway, I'm off to go listen to another Jay-Z concert at the White House, right? That's what actually happened, because if he had actually had a change of heart and he'd realized the type of danger that we were in, which is the Chris Christie argument, if he'd realized the type of danger that America actually was in, I think he would have given a speech on it, and he probably would have told the American people, like, look, when I came into office, I was going to do this, that, and the other. I was going to shut down Guantanamo. But now that I've been here for a while, what I've realized is there's a whole level of information that you are not privy to, but the United States is actually in an existential struggle with whatever forces there are, the evildoers. And so because of that, we have to have these programs in place. I was mistaken as a candidate because I was not privy to this. But, you know, now that I am here, I think you, the American people, should know. And we all got to rally around and do all this stuff. He didn't do any of that. He didn't have a chance.
No,
he was just like, oh, this is too hard. He's like, yeah, screw it. I'm not doing that.
He did the opposite. He did the opposite, Tex. I mean, the thing is, here's the crazy thing. I mean, the one thing that Christie got right in that speech that I agree with, he said that Obama changed none of Bush's policies. Well, that's true. In fact, he took all of Bush's shitty policies and put them on steroids. That's a fact. Now, he says, Christie's assertion is, he didn't change them because they work. Well, to what end do they work? If it's to try to dominate the world as a global empire and create a police state at home, then, well, yeah, I guess they worked, and Obama kept them going. The difference was mostly rhetorical. Obama's running around leading from behind, bending over and bowing to all our enemies, and not even clearly stating who this global war is against. I mean, isn't it ostensibly against radical Muslim jihadis? But we won't even say that. I mean, look at the Nidal Hassan incident down your way in Texas, right? That's workplace violence as opposed to a terrorist attack. Look at how long it took them to explain that Benghazi was a terrorist attack when, in fact, it was even bigger than that.
Why, rhetorically,
he's a complete – what's that?
Why do you hate workplace diversity like that?
Yeah, I think we should have more killings at work by different ethnicities so that it's fair all around. The crazy thing is, the shitty policies are continued, and the rhetoric makes us weaker. And I think that I don't want to spend my time talking about Obama because he's just an ass, and I don't care. But I think that the speech that we just heard from Christie highlights the division, this so-called civil war in the Republican Party. There are the statist, status quo, bigger government. Let's get paid and let's, you know, feed our friends in the corporations and vice versa, Republicans. And then there's the actual people who, you know, like, look at the Republican platform, look at conservatism in general, which at its core is libertarianism, as Reagan said back in 75. And they believe it. And they think that the Republican Party is the vehicle to get that realized. And then they get fed something like Mitt Romney, and they get a little disillusioned and just hold their noses and vote for him. Well, that doesn't work. So what do? Go third party? I mean, yeah, you know, alternate parties are certainly an option, especially at the local and state level. But let's be realistic. The Democrat-Republican duopoly owns every precinct in every county across the country, and until you change that at the local state level, it's a federal duopoly, and you're either going to get an R or a D. The D's are all communists, socialists. The R's are mostly communists and socialists, but there are some R's who are, in fact, you know, genuine wacko bird conservatives, so there is a chance. But not so long as the CLEC, what Pat Caddell called the CLEC, the Consultant Lobbyist Establishment Complex, controls the RNC and puts forward rules, the Ginsburg rules from Tampa, that debacle in Tampa, that basically allow the CLEC to pick the candidate, the nominee for the top of the ticket, and veto any delegate who will not support that candidate. So they're going to shove another rhino down your throats, shutting down the grassroots and promoting the ideas of Chris Christie, which are in no way, shape, or form authentically, genuinely Republican if the Republican Party is the conservative party. Do you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. And there is an interesting twist out there, an interesting trend, or sort of a boring one, depending upon how much you pay attention. But after this Chris Christie thing, this, of course, got a lot of buzz in the press on both the right and the left. And they were saying, well, what about what Chris Christie's saying, that this more extremist Tea Party wing that's really pulling the party away from its core beliefs towards the hard right, and it's the traditional Republicans in the Reagan tradition that need to save the party. And, you know, I'm like, when did the Rhino wing, the sellout idiots who were always in the minority for 50 years, the do-nothing party, when did they become like they're the heart and soul of the Republican Party? They're the people who suck. They're the people we've been trying to get rid of for years because they're useless. And now they're, oh, yeah, we're wrapped up in the mantle of all this stuff. It's these extremists who – that's the problem with the Republican Party is mm-hmm. it's completely schizophrenic because they're the Republican voters who vote for it for one thing because the Republican Party promises that it is one thing. And then when it gets into office, it does completely the opposite because they're lying to you.
Yeah, they sure
they
are.
They just are. They're not telling you that John Boehner – has no intention of doing anything about Obamacare ever, period. He'll keep holding votes to overturn it that will never go anywhere because he knows they'll never go anywhere. So he'll say, I have voted to, well, I've held 38 votes. Yeah, but you knew the outcome ahead of time. That's why you held the vote. If you thought it could actually be overturned, do you think John Boehner would hold the vote? No. That would be controversial. Do you think he's going to do anything to defund it behind the scenes? No. Do you think he's going to defund the IRS office that would enforce it? No. He's not going to do any of that.
Are you saying he's trying to avoid controversy? Is he trying to avoid controversy?
Absolutely. He's on easy
really?
Street, man. He's like, and he's trying to get rid of these. Like, who are these Tea Party people? Who are these conservatives? Give me a hard time. Get them out of the party. You know, and this is why this vast disillusionment with the government on both the right and the left. The political class in this country is just, they've lost all legitimacy, and they're scrambling to hold on to it, and they're trying to control the conversation in the media, but they've lost control of it.
They're losing control of it because you can only lie so much before people figure it out. But the interesting thing is, you know, you mentioned that he's trying to avoid controversy, and clearly the Tea Party, Libertarian, Liberty Movement wing of the party is the controversial end of the party, and he wants to quiet them. So he was willing to stir up the greatest controversy in the Republican Party's history in order to shut us up. Here's what happened. You remember, this is Tampa. This is little crying tan useless piece of beef jerky Johnny Boehner illegitimately pushing forward Ben Ginsburg's John Sununu rules, and Ginsburg is a Romney operative who should have had no say in these rules while they're, you know, driving Morton Blackwell around on a magical mystery tour. This is what little Johnny Boehner managed to squeeze through illegally, the famous teleprompter incident.
Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the adoption of the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. Chair, the ayes have it. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Really? In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. Half the friggin' convention said no, and he said, and the teleprompter told him, in the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. That's the kind of crap that is killing this party. I brought up Orton Blackwell.
Well, the funny thing is, John Boehner is very good at wielding an iron fist over the Republican Party and over the Republican voters and the base. Complete squish when it comes to doing anything in Congress against the Democrats. He does nothing. It's the same thing we saw with Mitt Romney, where they just steamrolled all opposition to Mitt Romney. And then when they got in the general election, they're like, well, I don't want to say anything bad about Obama.
He's a nice fellow.
I don't actually want to run for president against this guy. I just want to destroy all the conservatives in the party, you know. So now that that's accomplished, I'm done. Same thing with John Boehner. He doesn't actually care. He's literally, I think, one of the most, and I used the word worst with someone, and they were like, well, what about Nancy Pelosi? I was like, but she was effective. So
yeah.
John Boehner, I think, is like the weakest, most ineffective Speaker of the House we've probably ever had. Or you got to go way back, you know, way back to find somebody who is this useless. But John Boehner, he's showing up. He's like, present, you know, I'm here. He's just useless. He's doing nothing.
Look, He's speaking, you know, conservative rhetoric, and then running around and legislating, you know, from the left, you know, and giving us these, you know, speeches that he's doing something important when he's not. In fact, we're already at 30 minutes in the show, believe it or not, so I'm going to go ahead and get a little housekeeping in and then bring on our regular guest and a special guest for tonight. Folks, if you're listening live, right below the show graphics, there is a the show icon. There's a button that says follow. If you click on that button, you will follow the show in your Blog Talk Radio profile. You will get notifications of when we are broadcasting. Generally, we broadcast 10 p.m. Eastern Sundays. And also right below the show graphics that are scrolling there, whether you're listening live or in archive, is a download episode link. Just right-click on that. You can download an MP3, listen to it on any MP3-enabled device, burn a CD, or send it to a friend as an email. It is important to get this information out there because coming up this August 14th is our next chance to resurrect this dead Republican Party and raise it up as a real conservative party and actually do some damage in 2014 and 2016 and maybe undo the mess that we're in over the next few years and restore the republic. If you're on Facebook, please go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook. Like the page. You will get notifications in your news feed with our broadcast and other valuable information. And if you join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, you will get access to all of the articles and clips and other things that we use on the show right there for you to review whenever you need them. And speaking of housekeeping, often, you know, instead of using a broom, it is far better to use a club. Chris, you are live with Tex and Rex.
Gentlemen, I say that lightly.
How's it going, Chris?
Good, buddy. How you doing? Hey, you know, you guys are on a great roll. Very articulate. You guys are right on topic. I don't want to drag back backward because you're already moving forward into the RNC stuff. But one of the things, you know, with the Christie conversation, it's so important to understand this. What they did after post 9/11, you know, and what they set up with the Patriot Act is nothing to do with what these people are doing today. So when these guys talk about, you know, all these programs are essential, the question you have to ask is tapping all of my phone calls and emails and voice conversation that you say you're not listening to but gets, you know, stored anyway for the future in case you want to come back and call me a terrorist and take me out or whatever the case may be. You know, that is not what the Patriot Act was set up for. Patriot Act required a case. It required a suspect. It required a warrant, you know, to go after this guy. It required, you know, some validity that this guy was communicating with known bad people in other countries. What we have today is so far beyond that. And when you get these Republicans up here defending this crap, I'm telling you, it is the scariest thing I've heard in this country for a long time. The Patriot Act, I remember exactly, you know, Christie talks about memories. I remember where I was at, the car I was driving, my son and I driving down the freeway, listening to talk radio, and the Patriot Act was signed. And my son was young. This was prior to, before him going into the Army and fighting in a war. And I turned to him and I said, our freedoms are over. And it wasn't so much the Patriot Act itself, because we were at war. And we've done drastic things in this country before, you know, in crisis times. But it wasn't the act itself. It was what it set them up to do if it wasn't checked. And that's the challenge that we're facing today. And that's what these people like Rand and Amash and Cruz and the rest of them are trying to say is that this is not about security. This is about totalitarianism. This is a different thing. I want my country safe. I want my country to go, you know, and kick ass on somebody who does something bad to us, demolish him, come home and take care of our country, you know, and do what it's supposed to do. This is so far beyond any of that. And the scary thing to me is how complacent people are. That's the part that bothers me the most.
That's it. Chris, you're so right about that. And here's the interesting thing, and everybody talks about this stuff, you know, the anti-war left, and they're all about civil liberties. Well, since Obama got in, they've just been quiet. But let's keep in mind that all this crap that Obama is doing and all this crap that the Reid Senate and the Boehner House is allowing to go forward and be perpetuated, this is all Republican shit. This isn't the Democrats. This is the Republican stuff. So you know, you're talking about a check. Well, if the two parties are in lockstep on police state imperialist measures, there is no check other than the people in the states. But at the federal level, the party's the only way to do it. And the fact is that these are not Republican, as far as the principles of the party, these are not Republican things. These are way off base from true conservatism. And the fact is that, you know, we talk about the Tampa rules, we talk about the wacko birds, and everybody's automatically going to paint you with this whole, oh, this is the Ron Paul faction thing. This is just that stuff. So, you know, that's certainly, a way to look at it. But, I mean, you know, A, what's so wacky about Ron Paul? He talked about the Constitution. And B, if you go back to the 60s with the Goldwater movement and you go back to the 80s with Reagan, it's the same types of themes. So, you know, I don't think that anybody would call Morton Blackwell a Paul bot. I don't think anybody would call Morton Blackwell a wacko bird, right? But Morton Blackwell understands that these rules as they're written now destroy the voice of the grassroots in the party, and therefore it is no longer a party. It is now a structure of a small elite clique who are using people's money and people's efforts to run their favorite moron and to keep losing the Democrats. And we've got Matthew Hurt live with us now, Matthew from the Leadership Institute. And you know Morton Blackwell pretty well, and you're are you going up to the meeting on August 14th for the RNC?
I will be. I'll be in Boston for that week with Morton again. He'll be working once again to undo some of the rules issues from Tampa last year. And I was with him earlier this year in Los Angeles at the spring meeting. And so we'll be doing more of what we've been doing and attempting to set right what was done wrong in Tampa.
Excellent. Excellent. And any developments there, anything going on that we might want to let people know about?
Sure.
A lot of these
meetings
are arranged ahead of time, so has there been any movement prior to the meeting?
Absolutely, yeah. Morton is working to make one change this time, and it's to Rule 16C2, which historically, prior to Tampa last year, delegates could be assigned proportionally. So in a state like Virginia, where the way we assign delegates is if a candidate gets a majority of the vote in that congressional district, they get the delegates for that district, and then statewide, it's whoever wins. Some states, however, do it proportionally. So say let's do a rehash of 2012, and Mitt Romney gets 60% of the vote, and Ron Paul gets 40% of the vote. That's what happened in Virginia. Ron Paul would be allotted 40% of the delegates, and Mitt Romney would be allotted 60% of the delegates. So they changed that and eliminated that to where any primary caucus or candidate selection process before April 1st had to be winner-take-all and binding, and we are trying to eliminate that winner-take-all provision, which was inserted in Tampa last year. So it would allow for proportional wins where, you know, if you have a respectable percentage in a state, you still go home with some delegates from that state.
That's an important thing. And that's even in primary states. I mean, this isn't necessarily just a caucus issue, which is obviously really where the Ron Paul movement was focused. This is you're talking about general primary states too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Wherever there is a contest held before April 1st of the election year, be it a caucus or a primary or, you know, whatever the state decides to do when as it pertains to selecting their nominee. So this would have a big impact on the early states, you know, your Iowa, your Nevada, your New Hampshire, your South Carolina, and so on in those early states.
Excellent. And so this is what Morton is going to be working on from now until August 14th, and then try to get it. And are we going to play these same games where we, you know, do stuff in committee, and you know, we get a nod in committee, and then we take it to the general membership, and it's immediately shot down? Or is there any indication that that these people have gotten serious about actually taking a look at this stuff?
Well, there is a caucus within the RNC of members who are conservative, who align with the grassroots, and they're called the Conservative Caucus. He has had a number of discussions with them. I believe they had a conference call last week where he is building support for this particular amendment. As far as that goes, there's been not much new news. I speak regularly with him, and we've arranged travel to Boston, but with the exception of what I've told you, I haven't heard much. He seems to be encouraged by the discussions, and that's good. I'll be on hand to get information to other members and attempt to sway where I can. I'm optimistic, and the grassroots hasn't let up on this. You know, we've had some great national organizations that have raised awareness for this, and then we've had guys like you who have hammered on this, and then just grassroots activists in general who are telling their members that their RNC members, this isn't what we want to do. This isn't, consolidating power at the top is not how we grow the party.
Right. And absolutely. Real quick, Matthew, since you're bringing that up, and then we're going to go to Tex, what can people who are listening who may be party members, may just be conservatives who are concerned, what can people do to help you and Morton further this conservative agenda with these rules? What can their role be?
Sure. I think that one of the big things they can do is email their state party. The parties have three votes from each state, the party chairman, the national committee man, and the national committee woman. And I've got a list of those somewhere. There's been some turnover since Tampa, and some new folks have been elected and are now serving in those capacities. But email your state party and say, look, we want you to support efforts to restore power to the grassroots. We want you to support provisions like what Morton Blackwell has proposed. And as my friend Justin Amash in Congress said, be polite and friendly. I had a great conversation with a staffer. My congressman is Jim Moran. He's one of the most far-left members of Congress. I called his office this week and asked him to support Justin Amash's NSA amendment, and I was polite. I said, my name is Matthew. I'm a voter in the district. I live in this area. I would like for the congressman to support this amendment. It was a very cordial conversation. I would encourage folks that to be polite, and because, you attract more flies with honey than with vinegar, and we're trying to catch as many flies as we can and get them to vote for this amendment in August.
Okay. Great.
Absolutely.
Tex, did you want to comment on this stuff?
I would just say that, I think there's sort of an erroneous assumption on the part of the leadership, which is that, the Tea Party has taken over the castle, so we're going to retreat up to the keep, and we're going to be up there, and we'll run everything there, and everyone will just accept our decisions. And I think that's a mistake, because you can't have a political party if the people that you're counting on to vote and to support you feel that they don't have a voice, or that their voice isn't appreciated, because you certainly have a lot of leadership and or punditry out there going out and talking about extremist, Tea Partiers, which were the original base of the Republican Party, as far as I was always aware, and the libertarian wing. So already they're trying to slice the party. I mean, every time they say that, it's like taking a saw to the party and cutting it apart and stating that we don't want you in the group. And these rules only further reinforce that, hey, we only want our club, and the rest of you are supposed to go along with what we have to say. Well, people aren't going to do that, and you're going to end up with a shrunken party. And I don't see that this party, now that you have essentially what, we call the Rhino group running the party, I don't see that people on the left are like, hey, wow, the Republican Party's really changed. No, now my mind is open. Maybe I'm going to vote Republican now. They still despise the Republican Party as much as always, and they see this as just some sort of trick And so it's not gaining them any votes. There's no votes in the center, the quote center, that are coming to the party because of this. If anything, they're losing their base, and essentially they're just destroying the party because it's their party in their mind, and they're going to run it, and they don't care what the base thinks. And that's a complete mistake. I mean, it's organizational decline is what I'm seeing. So, you know, I applaud the efforts that you guys are doing here at the RNC meetings in order to try to change this and, you know, have a party that actually listens to the base where it wants to go, and you can have a successful organization that way and something that could be dominating American politics. In a lot of ways, this is a conversation we have to have, which is, you know, what is the direction the party needs to go? And the party will be better for it, but if the whole thought is to, you know, close up the conversation and just run it from the top, and it's definitely going to fail, I think.
Certainly. And what we're seeing now, and you guys mentioned it earlier with the votes, voting on the NSA amendment from Congressman Amash and the attacks by Governor Christie on, you know, the libertarian strain, he says, you know, this the opening salvo in this battle, because before this, they didn't really take us seriously. The opening shot was when the Washington Free Beacon attacked Jack Hunter, who was a member of Senator Rand Paul's staff and a very influential, intelligent, articulate. He helped co-write The Tea Party Goes to Washington and Senator Jim DeMint's book. And the Washington Free Beacon, which is an arm of the more hawkish wing of the party, you know, the bomb everyone indiscriminately whenever and we're cool with the national security state, they went after him and made him an example. He stepped down 2 weeks after the story broke, and they see us as a threat now. And so they're going to use the tactics that the left uses to personally destroy influential liberty movers and shakers, you know, as it were, in an attempt to attack and marginalize us. And, you know, we just have to come back even stronger than before and say, you know, you sort of have to elbow your way into the party. And then once there are enough of you there, you look around and with some pushback, and it's going to get worse, I think, before it gets better, eventually folks will say, oh, you know, we should bring these people in and let them play in the sandbox.
Yeah, well, most organizations that want to be successful, particularly ones that heavily rely on support from their members, want to listen to their members and go in a direction they support. You know, that's what a lot of politics is. Politicians don't create the big political movements of the day. What they do is they find what they are and they get in front of them. And in this case, the Republican Party leadership seems to be doing the exact opposite, which is they see this big movement out there among the people to move in the, quote, Tea Party direction. And they were, I think, shocked by 2010. And instead of getting in front of the movement and saying, hey, we are the party that's going to, if this is what you want, we're the party that's going to lead you in that direction, so come join us, they're stating that we don't want you. If you believe those things, you know, we want to stop you, you know. I mean, it's sort of like being in the Middle Ages and stating, well, I'm just against the Renaissance. I just, you know, I don't think we should do that, you know. But yet everyone, that's what they want, right? I mean, how successful can your organization be? And, you know, quite frankly, I think we're being led by fools.
There's no doubt about it, Tex. We are being led by fools, and you're right. I mean, either you've got to appeal to your audience, which is mostly conservative and libertarian, or you have to convince them that you have a better plan for what they believe in. Well, they've tried to convince us, but their rhetoric doesn't match their actions, and their actions don't comport with what we believe conservatism to be. Chris, I know you've done some organizational you know, structuring and things like that. I mean, would you agree that what Matthew and Tex were just talking about, that if the organization is trying to dictate a vision to its members that is diametrically opposed to their views, I mean, that's a good way to kill something?
Yeah, no doubt. All good leadership, you know, yeah, leadership has got to take
control, and they need to be the, you know, the visionary and things like that, and they need to hold structure together. You know, you don't want your new people, so to speak, who don't have the wisdom and the experience, you know, to screw up everything you've built. I understand that because I've been in those positions most of my life. But at the same time, a leader doesn't have their ear, you know, and their hand out to the people at the bottom who, you know, do the work, so to speak, whether you want to call it grassroots or the guy working in the factory, sooner or later your system's going to fail. I had something, I want to add something I think is really important, because you guys know that I do a lot of my research and passion is what's going on in the Middle East and all this kind of stuff and, you know, potential for upcoming wars and everything that's going on around the world, because you won't get that news in U.S. media. But I really believe that what we have is a shadow government in this war machine that is probably one of the strongest parts of our economy. And I think these people see anybody who is sick and tired of what they've seen since 9/11. You know, I don't think people have a problem with kicking the enemy's butt, but I think what's happening with this nation building and being against Al-Qaeda but funding them in Syria, for, you know, against Muslim Brotherhood but funding them in Egypt, you know what I mean? People are starting to get really sick of this crap. And I think that's the battle that you're seeing, is not so much, you know, the rhino Republicans, but I think is the war machine, because this is where billions and billions and billions of dollars, or trillions, if you look at what's happened to our economy since 9/11, trillions of dollars. You look at NSA, same story. It's hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent on this system that's fundamentally illegal, you know, and unconstitutional, but they don't want to give it up because it's money, it's income, it's jobs, it's you know, we're the lobbyists. All these guys who voted against Amash's amendment had a 2-to-1 lobbying investment into them from the war machine people. So I really believe that what you're seeing is not so much a battle inside the Republican Party, but if you separate out and look at the Democrats and the Republicans, and you look at the people that are pushing for, whether it's the NSA issue or attacking libertarians or attacking grassroots Tea Party people, it's the people who want war. That's their industry. That's their job. That's where their money's made. That's where their wealth is made. Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, I think you got it right. And the thing is that warfare abroad, and, you know, we're really running this thing like an empire, except instead of, you know, enjoying the plunder of our imperial conquest, okay, there's a small clique of transnationals who get all that stuff, and we just spill blood and go into debt, and mostly the blood of our youth. But, you know, that also engenders a police state at home. And frankly, if you really think about it, the whole NSA thing, what Snowden brought up, the IRS scandals, the Benghazi cover-up, all these things indicate that what you have here are government technocrats that just know better what you need than you do. And if you really look at it and you want to have an opposition party to this trend, well, then let's assume that's going to be the Republican Party, then they should probably run their organization differently. And, Matthew, wouldn't you say that the Republican Party right now is running, the RNC is running this party like a police state? They're telling us at the top, this is what we're going to do, get behind it, we know better than you. So your caucuses and your preferences and your campaigning for these wacko bird candidates is pointless because we're going to pick our solid guy who's going to perpetuate the warfare welfare state. Isn't that kind of what they're doing?
Sure, sure. And, I look back to the 2010 cycle in 2012 and candidates like Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Ted Cruz who opposed the establishment every step of the way. You know, Mike Lee ran against Bennett, who was an entrenched incumbent establishment Republican. Ted Cruz picked the guy who, you know, he was running at 2% against the guy who was christened by the NRSC as would be the next senator from Texas. And the same with Rand Paul, you know, Trey Grayson, who I think now runs a Democrat super PAC in the Northeast, was the establishment pick. That was Mitch McConnell's guy in Kentucky. We've got our invitations to the party got lost in the mail.
and they want us to if we're going to be involved, to come in, sit down, and shut up. And they're using very similar tactics. But I think just like what we're seeing nationally with people who disagree with the national security state, it's happening within the Republican Party. People are saying, you know, you don't have the right to exercise this authority over us. And thankfully, luckily, what I'm seeing on the ground is more people are you know, the grassroots groundswell is growing, and people are coming over to our side. And ultimately, I mean, it's a long battle, and people will get weary and drop out. I saw a guy the other day in Tennessee who's very involved in the Republican Assembly, their conservative group, who said, threw up his hands and said, I can't do it anymore. And we're going to see that. But I'm encouraging people to stay involved and to build a grassroots movement that can compete with and push back against the establishment.
Well, Matthew, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, look, I can't tell you how many times I felt like giving up, and I never imagined a year ago, which is when we started doing this, that I'd be on the radio every week talking about this stuff. But, you know, I see two
wouldn't
things.
Be.
Yeah,
at the time.
That was, ideally, we were hoping that it would be a short-lived gig and be over by the convention. But the thing is that, to me, the desperate measures, these Alinsky tactics that they're taking and these measures, it indicates to me that they are losing. They have overreached. People aren't putting up with it. And I know that it's easy to give up, but I think that's why it's important that we repeat these points and we build these coalitions and broad coalitions. I mean, you know, when did you ever think that you would have someone like, I mean, let's face it, Warren Blackwell is kind of Republican establishment. The guy's been there forever. And then, you know, people like the Ron Paul revolution, you know, on the same side. Well, the fact is that that's what grassroots is about. It is about the principles of conservatism, whether, you know, libertarian conservatism or a little bit less libertarian, but there are some significant overlaps, and it's about all of us working together. I mean, that's how Reagan won. He wasn't supposed to win. They tried to torpedo him the way they did Ron Paul, but he was able to coalesce a group of people who agreed on many things, even though they disagreed on some things. And I think we're seeing that again, but it's so easy to get discouraged. And I think it's important what you're telling us, that there are efforts there, and that of the 168 committee men and committee women, that there are people who are starting to listen, whether it's from a practical standpoint because they just want to win, or whether it's from a principle standpoint because they're actually conservatives. Tex, you want to chime in on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the ultimate problem where – you have people, you have these movements that are coming up, and you know, you're increasing the size and the scope of the movement. So, for instance, the Republican Party has always struggled with getting the youth vote, right? Because it is portrayed as the party of old white men, right? Whether that's true or not, that's how it's portrayed in the press, and most people don't pay a lot of attention. So that's the shorthand, okay? Then you have someone like the Ron Paul movement out there, it comes and it's bringing a lot of the youth vote in. And instead of our party embracing it, the party turns it away and firmly rejects it. In the case of, I believe it was the Massachusetts delegation, anyone who was under the age of 30 and anyone who was Hispanic, they were throwing out on the delegate list. That was their goal. And then after the convention, or after the defeat, they're like, we need to figure out how to reach out to the Hispanic vote. We need to figure out how to reach out to the youth vote. We need to, you know, and so they have Marco Rubio talking about how he likes hip-hop, you know. I don't think it works that way. You know, you have young people who come into the party and you kick them out. You have Hispanics who come into the party, they become delegates, and you kick them out because they're not solid Mitt Romney. You know, having someone later on come and, you know, talk about how they like hip-hop music, people kind of remember, hey, you treated me like crap when I was in your party, and I don't really care what record you listen to. You know, they try to do these sort of symbolic things and less the substantive things. And when people actually get motivated to come join the party because, you know, they have some fire in the belly, they want to do things, they want to affect change in their country, their locality, they want to be part of this political party, then the party craps on them because, well, hey, you know, don't you understand? We always run the guy who lost last time. Mitt Romney's next in line, so he's going to be the guy. We don't have debates or discussions. And also, we lose like nobody else's business because of this. So who are you people coming up? So, you know, I just think that the leadership is really disconnected, and the leadership is more concerned with control than they are with success, because control gives them money. And I think that's really what they want out of this thing. Like, how can I make a lot of money doing this? So I have to keep maintain control of the Republican Party. The success of the party is completely secondary. If anything, it's an afterthought, I think, to the current leadership of the party. They don't care about that. They just want to maintain the power so that they can keep making their income.
Yep, that's absolutely true. Listen, gentlemen, Matthew's going to have to hop off soon, so why don't we first go to Chris and see if he wants to add anything to the conversation while we still have Matthew here.
Yeah. Yeah, I one of the things when you guys were when both you guys were to all three of you were talking, I you know, my mind is flying around different events in our time in the party. And you know, when we came out of the Nixon era, the party was down to 18% of the nation. And Republicans had pretty much settled in as the minority party, and they were, had accepted it. And I remember all the background of the Gingrich revolution when he went out and developed the training mechanisms to build up new young Republican leadership. Back in those days it was, you know, cassette tapes and pamphlets, and now we have the internet. But he built a national movement, and it was a lot of it was built into the youth across the country. Because when you look at the 90s, when the Republicans won back the House and had won the first majority in over 40 years, there were a lot of young people in there. You know, I mean, even Santorum, when he was in the debates, talking about, yeah, I, you know, cut my teeth on those, you know, Gingrich training programs. You know, there's a lot in history, nothing new under the sun. And I think it's really important to understand that. You know, we've been here before. We fought these battles before, and I'm sure in the Cold War there was, you know, the warmongers. I mean, coming out of Eisenhower, he was the last president that said, you need to watch this war machine because it's going to take over our country if you're not careful. So since then, we haven't had many people that have, you know, outside of Reagan, peace through strength, but let's not go, you know, do war all over the world. So you have a lot of history there to look back on. And if anything, you know, there yeah, some techniques and strategies, but the other thing is some encouragement. Because I think that right now is people are just beat. You know, they're beat up. Any of us who followed the primary as closely as we did, you know, that was a pretty devastating emotional content to see how far they were willing to go to push Romney down our throat and how
yeah.
far they were willing to go, including almost destroying the party. And then lying about it, and still lying about it today, and then coming back and then going, oh, by the way, we need the youth and the minority and the women vote. Well, that was Ron Paul. You know, he brought that, and you kicked him in the teeth. So I think there's some encouragement here.
Yeah, you hit on an important point, because I think a lot of people on the right feel sort of defeated because, you know, how could Obama get reelected when he'd done such a horrid job? You know, how could we have lost? Well, you ran Mitt Romney, for one thing. So that's like about 60% of your loss right there. But, you know, the other thing is now, so you have sort of the sense of defeat, but then the leadership of, quote, your party or, quote, our party, the one we vote for, is sitting out there stating that, you know, you people are the problem, you who supported us, you people who – I mean, I didn't because, you know, I wasn't going to vote for Mitt Romney. I knew he was going to win my state, but I was going to go out and make a protest vote. But, you know, you people who went out there, held your nose and voted for our crap candidate that we forced down your throat, you're the problem. And I think people are thinking, like, wait a minute, I didn't like this guy in the first place. I held my nose and voted for him. And now that I did that and we lost, you're still blaming me, you know. Romney was the leadership candidate from day one. You forced him down everyone's throat, and now that we lost and everyone's demoralized, they're beating up the base and saying that you're a terrible base. Everything about you is wrong. You don't deserve good leadership like we provide. And there you have a dysfunctional, dying organization that really, I mean, at this point, no. If it continues like this, this is organizational death. It's the end of it.
Well, it's It's already dead, Tex. The question is, can we raise it? And that's the kind of stuff that Morton Blackwell and Mark Willis and other people are working on, and that's what Matthew's been talking to us about tonight. Matthew, I know you got to run. If you can just give us your final thoughts on what you expect to accomplish at the meeting in Boston, August 14th through 17th, and also if you can let us know about what people can do to further the agenda of conservatism and the restoration of the grassroots, and anything else they can do in general to assist themselves and teach others how to be better grassroots activists before we go.
Sure. You know, like I said earlier, what I would encourage your listeners to do is email, call their state parties and say, you know, we want you to support this amendment to change the rules, to support the grassroots. We're looking at, and you guys are talking about the bringing young people into the party. We have really excellent young representatives in our party, people like Justin Amash, Thomas Massey. Even Ted Cruz and Rand Paul are younger on average than, you know, the average members of Congress. So supporting those guys, and always I like to plug the Leadership Institute just because their training is so valuable for conservative activists. So if you go to leadershipinstitute.org, find a training in your area. If you feel like coming to the D.C. area, you know, you want to see some monuments, you want to smell the corruption, and maybe get a training in. The first full week in August, there is the Future Candidate School. It's 4 days, the best training for future candidates that's out there. So if you want to run for county commission or state senate or U.S. Congress, this is the first step, getting trained, learning how to run a campaign and how to raise money and how to win. Maybe there's a scorched Republican in your district that you want to beat next year. This is the first step in doing that. So that's what I'd say. You know, get all the training you need and make calls to the state party asking them to support this amendment.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate the help, and yeah, I think that it's important to understand that training from the type that Morton Blackwell has put together is very powerful for grassroots. And Matthew, we applaud your efforts, and please give a shout out to Morton for us that we are behind him, and so are our listeners. And we will encourage everybody to make those calls and get this thing fixed. And we thank you very much for coming on. Keep us posted with what's
happening.
Thanks,
Matt.
Will do. I'll keep you guys posted. Thanks for having me on. And as soon as I land in Boston, I'll shoot you guys a message.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, that was Matthew Hurt, works closely with Morton Blackwell, committeeman from Virginia, talking about what you can do to affect change at the upcoming RNC summer meeting in Boston, Massachusetts, August 14th through 17th. If you go to the Tex and Rex show page or you go to Coalition of Freedom, Chris's group on Facebook, you will find links to very important pages, including, RNC Rules Action, and also the GOP list of members. You can call your local office. You can call, email, tweet them directly, send them emails, write them a letter. And you don't have to limit yourself to your three committee people. You can call others from out of state. And especially when you have someone like Warren Blackwell from Virginia or someone like Mark Willis from Maine, you might want to give them a call and give them some encouragement so that they know that there's a momentum behind them. But also especially let the others know, especially your own membership, that you want these rules fixed, because if this party is going to stand for conservatism, which is what it professes to be, then it really needs to step up and let the grassroots say what they need to say. All right, we'll go back to Tex and then Chris as I hunt around for a few more calls.
Well, I would just say that, you know, I think this is an important discussion that's being held up in Boston. You know, as I said, usually when I have the meeting has already been held. It's just about going through the motions at that point. All the decisions are already made. So I would hope that, there's at least a conversation. I remember when we talked about the last meeting, there was someone, it was a lady, I forget, but she said that she hadn't heard about all the problems with this change in rules, and she was going to have to look into it, she said. So I certainly hope that she's done so at this point and she realizes what exactly is going on.
I'm fairly confident she didn't text, because I think she was actually lying about that, and that, I believe, is the committee woman from South Carolina. Unfortunately, Nicole Rebels can't join us tonight. She could give you the details on her, but she basically used that as an excuse for not taking action. And then when she got back to North Carolina, she threw us under the bus because obviously the technocrats know better what we need and they know better how to win than we do.
Well,
because, you know,
also,
obviously they did so well with Dole and McCain and Romney that they know better than we do.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, they're racking up the victories at an alarming rate. I mean, that's the sad thing is it's like the leadership doesn't want to win, you know, because I think they don't. They just want to make money. But also someone who's sort of that uninformed or that naive that would say something like that, they would probably go to the leadership and like, what's going on with this rule change? And the leadership would tell them, oh, don't vote for that. That allows those crazy, you know, grassroots to come in and start voting for all these candidates that can't win. It's like, yeah, they're right. I need to go back and make sure that we pick Mitt Romney's that do win. And she's like, okay, great. So that's what we're doing from now on. So
yeah, well,
you gotta watch out
right?
for that because I, you know, my fear is that that's exactly what's going to happen at this meeting. And you know, we'll see if it bears out. But you know, I suspect you're right.
Yeah, I suspect
what's
you're
that?
Right. I mean, but. I suspect that you're right, that that's the intention of where they're going. I think the thing to remember is that irrespective of how these people view us and what their you know, money-making scheme agenda with no principles is, the only lock that they have is the pretext that enough of the membership will go along with their shitty ideas. And I think they got a rude awakening last time when – something just fell. Rude awakening last time when so many of us, quote, stayed home. Well, we didn't stay home. We just voted for more conservative candidates than the monster they were running. So I think it goes to the point that we grassroots, whether we agree on everything or just a few things, doesn't matter. If you're a non-Democrat voter who wants to see political change, then it's time to bring massive pressure to bear on these people because they want nothing more than to preserve their jobs. And so this is the way to let them know that they better start playing ball with us. And, you know, also it's good to educate some of them. Some of them aren't that jaded. To educate some of them that we're not some kind of chaotic group of wacko birds. We really are people who are politically active, who believe in the Constitution and think that the Republican Party, for now, is the vehicle at the national level to do it. It's not like all of us are running around like they are.
Game over, man. It's game over.
You know, it's not over. It's game over if we get another Romney. That's without a doubt a fact.
Absolutely. I mean, and who are the wacko birds? The wacko birds are running the party. They think the party's doing good if they control it and they keep picking Mitt Romney's and John McCain. Because, oh, these are the moderates. This is what people want to see. They don't want to see people who have core beliefs and principles that they stand up for that people are going to bash them for in the media. Ronald Reagan got bashed in the media every single day, and he did fine. They're just They're just afraid to go take on the media. And you know who got rid of Newt? It wasn't the media. It wasn't anybody. It was the Republican Party. They turned on him because they were like, oh, well, we can't stand up to this sort of media scrutiny. Yeah, you can, because the American people didn't pay attention to what the media was saying. They didn't care. Yeah, and there were some people out there like, oh, this Gingrich, you know, oh, my God, the Gingrich who stole Christmas, what was that, Time magazine or whatever, you know, oh, they put that on the cover. Boy, that just boils my goat, you know. But nobody cared. They kept voting for him. You know, the majority was voting for him because he was fixing the country. He was balancing the budget. And then you go look back, people are like, well, Bill Clinton did a great job because he balanced the budget, you know.
Yeah.
they just have this collective amnesia. Now it's Bill Clinton who balanced the budget, not Newt Gingrich, you know. But
did Bill Clinton do it with a cigar?
Yeah. We have leadership that's so stupid they don't even realize this. That you can do these things, you can be successful, you stand up for what you believe in, you go be effective, you go get the things done that you promised to do, and people will follow you. I mean, they'll, you know, as they say, walk through a wall in order to come over to your side if you're doing these things. But if you're like, well, we can't do this stuff, we need to be like the Democrats. Well, okay, you know, if you're going to be like the Democrats, why not just vote Democrat? They're already there, right? I mean, why would I go for the intermediate step of even bothering to vote for you? If I'm going to go vote for a socialist party, I might as well vote for the one that's like proud of being socialist instead of the ones who are embarrassed that they're socialist. I mean, what is
the
appeal
of that?
Yeah, exactly.
They got more experience.
What is the appeal? You know, and so don't know, the leadership of the Republican Party, the direction they want to take the party is just completely wrong. Every one of their advisors who are telling them this are complete morons and who are out for themselves. And if they believe any of this crap, then, you know, I'm sorry. They're just wrong.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Well, you know who their advisors are. You know who the advisors are that wrote that that autopsy report and are standing around telling the Republican Party what they need to do are the people that back Romney. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, that's the group.
Yep,
the biggest,
yeah.
biggest
well,
loser,
ahead of time,
the easiest,
and now they're
the easiest
they're
guy to defeat. Yeah.
No, Chris,
yeah,
you're absolutely
actually,
right.
That reminds me, an article came out today about, I don't know if it was exactly today, but in the past couple of days, about Mitt Romney, where they did this interview about him and, you know, what do you think you did right and what do you think you did wrong in the campaign? And I was thinking, oh, I know what you did wrong. You ran for office. But they had this thing about, well, you know, there are certain times where I just thought that, you know, I couldn't win and that, you know, I just wasn't going to get enough support from the conservatives because of my Romney care, and I really wanted to drop out and everything he said. But, you know, I had this big meeting of my advisors, and I was going to go into this meeting, and I was going to tell them that I'm not going to run, I'm going to drop out because I don't think that I can get the support. And then I asked them, I said, but do you guys really think that I could get the support of the party? I mean, do you really think that I could get the support? He's asking his advisors who he's paying, right? And he thinks he's getting impartial advice. You know what I'm saying?
You know how much money those guys made off this campaign, off of the primary?
$150 million.
Fortune.
$150 million
fortune.
To lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, look.
They probably put him on mute. After he asked the question, they put him on mute. They burst out laughing for like 30 seconds. Like, this guy is like the stupidest person ever. And they put him off mute, and they're like, you know, Mitt, we think that you are the person.
You're the man.
This is your time in history. And also,
you sound presidential.
Just don't
hourly
attack
rate
Obama.
For this phone call is like $100,000. Just to listen to this phone
just
call.
Just don't attack Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, it's chaos, and the fact is that it is corrupt. There's not only corruption in Washington, D.C., there's corruption at the higher levels of these parties, and they're interested in nothing more than furthering their own agenda and collecting their own rewards. Irrespective of what we want. However, they know that they've got to move a significant portion of the populace of the faction or the country with them because they can't have too much resistance. A little resistance is good because a little opposition gives you something to speak against, but too much resistance undermines your efforts. And that's what we have to do. We have to bring that pressure to bear. And somebody who I know likes pissing off liberals a lot is Paul Rarian. Paul, you're live with Tex, Rex, and Chris.
Well, what do you know? We talk about these guys making so much money, all right? Well, who's giving them this money? Who are the idiots that are still giving money to the RNC, the RNC elite? I stopped giving money to the RNC before the 2012 election when we saw what was going on with the Paul campaign and how Newt was being treated. Right? Any donations that I provide, I provide it direct to candidate. No more party money. So how can we have that communication? Cut these monkeys. Stop feeding the monkey somehow.
Corporations.
Well, corporations. You know,
well, it's the big donors.
Pardon?
It's the big donors, not us so much. I mean, I think your point is very valid, Paul. I think for all of us out here in grassroots, if you're trying to back a conservative candidate, do not give any money to the party, the RNC. Don't give it to the House Committee for Republican Reelection or whatever bullshit they have. Give it directly to your actual conservative candidate. But as far as the money that's swishing around in this RNC collect, these are the big donors. And the big donors, I mean, look, here's the thing that a lot of us grassroots don't quite understand about the truly wealthy. I'm not giving you Obama's definition of wealthy. It's not somebody who makes $250,000 a year, even somebody who has $1 million in the bank. I'm talking about the uber wealthy who are the major donors to both parties. These people don't give money on principle. The most common strategy that these uber wealthy people use, whether it's the Koch brothers or George Soros or anybody else, okay, they use the strategy of hedging, which means that they're going to invest their money where they are guaranteed to get a return on what they need, which is why they tend to fund both parties, or if they've happened to give their creds in one direction or the other, they make sure the parties are so similar it really doesn't matter. It's just a rhetorical difference. But what they do is they make sure they get the guys in there who are going to play ball with using the government regulations to further their corporatist agenda and favor them over their competitors. And that's the sad fact. And, of course, you know, the money being in it isn't really as much of a problem because the clique that wants to be bought by these guys can be bought by these guys. But then they got to convince the voters. And it's the grassroots who have to convince the voters not to play this game. And then no matter how much money they have, they can't get the votes. Even with all the rigged machines, you can only rig an election so much. You can only rig it so much. So if we've got a couple of pockets that are questionable, maybe they put in their machines and rig it that way. But if enough of the voting populace moves in one direction, they can't give you the results in another direction. It would just be too much.
So how do we I thought there were some kinds of laws on the books. Maybe it's just my figment. That we had to have a record of where the donations came from over a certain limit. So do we have mechanisms to show where the corporations are hedging, and then put the word out on that?
Any donation to an individual candidate or to one of the political parties, so something like the DNC, the RNC, or your state party, that's all tracked. But then it comes to sort of what they call the soft money, which goes to the the political action committees and the interest groups, and you know the Karl Rove
pack. That's the one.
Yeah, the Karl Rove, America yeah. Crossroads, that kind of stuff. That is not tracked, and nobody knows who's donating that money or how much. And those things, they tend to dominate the campaigns because they have vastly larger sums of money than the individual candidates do.
Yeah, do those PACs actually give it to one of the parties through some channel, or do they actually fund like the advertisements and the campaign activities independent of party of money channeling?
They're completely
yes.
independent of the party, and they can't. Even if they, so like Karl Rove and, you know, running America Crossroads, he's a Mitt Romney guy, and so his whole goal is to boost Mitt Romney and make Mitt Romney the nominee. And but he cannot speak to the Romney campaign directly or talk with them or do joint strategy.
Oh,
so
that's one of those wink-wink things we heard in the debate, right? So, yeah, that's like it's on
yeah.
the books, but nobody pays attention to it, right?
Exactly. Karl Rove's smart enough not to pick up a phone and call him because, among other things, Karl Rove knows that he created an organization that will track all of his phone calls. But when he was working for George Bush. But
yeah.
that doesn't mean that he doesn't have people who work for him or that he knows that he can talk to, who can talk to people and they can communicate that way. I mean, it's not that complicated.
Yeah, I think they usually do it in roadside public bathrooms. It involves foot tapping and something like that. That's how they communicate and coordinate their campaign.
Yeah,
they stick their foot out the stall and wait for a kick.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the simple fact is, yeah, is it corrupt? Yes, without a doubt. Are these people contributing money in order to further a particular agenda? Well, obviously, look, if you're a wealthy Wall Street guy, whether you're liberal or conservative or left or right, doesn't really matter. your major goal is to make sure that the money keeps flowing, right? You don't want things screwed up from that angle. So, you know, whether you are investing in the energy industry or pharma or industrial complex, whatever it might be, you don't care as long as your guys are going to go in there and further the agenda that keeps the money flowing. So, you know, little quirky things like the Fourth Amendment or Article 1, Section 8 that says that Congress cannot abdicate its authority over the Treasury, that kind of stuff, that doesn't matter to them, okay? And it can only work for them if we sit back and participate or sit back and watch it happen without complaint. And that's the key, and that's where grassroots comes in. Now, in general American history, the populace overall was involved in these politics, and power was far more diffused than it was local. Now we've got Big Fed that's pretty much got its hands in everything, and most people are unplugged, apathetic, and overwhelmed to pay attention. which is why you need to move more to a grassroots model, and they're moving more towards a top-down model. So the problem, and you can see how that works in our advantage if we push the agenda. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, we have an election this year, major election for our legislative body and our executive branch. Well, the RINOs wanted to have a statewide primary because they knew that their money, their donors, their advertising, their super PACs could convince people to vote for their candidate. Well, the grassroots pushed through a convention, and we held a convention this year. And, in fact, the RINO pulled out even before the convention because he knew that at a convention of grassroots activists, delegates who registered, paid, and traveled to Richmond to vote, were not going to fall for the RINO BS. They were going to actually take a look at things. And Virginia, the Republican Party of Virginia, elected the most conservative Republican ticket it's ever had. And that shows you the power of grassroots. So we're in a stage right now where the American public, for the most part, is ignorant and unplugged. And so that's why we need to pull power back more towards the grassroots. But the only way we're going to succeed in doing that, not only is showing them that, hey, there is enough of us out here that if you don't pay attention to us, no matter how much money you have, you're going to lose. And at some point, some of these people do actually want to win. Some of them just want to make money. And, you know, if you can make money, $150 million with a losing campaign, you don't care if you win or lose, as long as you get paid. But some of them actually want to win and have their, quote,
well,
brand name be relevant. You got to push them.
If you don't start winning, then there's no need to hedge bets by investing in your party if you never win, right?
Right.
So all of a
yep.
sudden the money dries up, too. Like, you guys lose all the time.
Yep.
So, you know, that's bad for the organization.
Yeah, so if we look at this money spigot thing and the government – So my way of thinking about this is there's two kind of avenues on this, you know, keep the money flowing context. Keep the money flowing out of government to big business through subsidies and other things like that along those lines of largesse. And then there's the avenue of, well, let the business make their own money in an unfettered way and get rid of these regulations that gets the gets people employed. All right. So, you know, I'm just trying to think of the big items that we could actually talk about independent of the minutia items. You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, the grassroots is something we got to do. But if we keep saying grassroots, but don't have a clear, decisive difference in this getting the money to business, so to speak, who's going to be funding this stuff, that and the Uber rich, the Bill Gates, as you say. But if they're more concerned, if they want the money to keep flowing, there's two ways to do that. One is through government largesse, and one is through companies that are highly successful and can start and become successful in unfettered ways. So how do we get that message crafted that says, let's let business grow rather than continue the largesse, which is unsustainable, right? And
let me raise my hand. Call on me, Teach.
I'm just trying to get an argument, get the sides of the equation going, because these guys are going to throw money at something. Well, let's throw money at the right thing.
Well, I'll give you a good example. So Obama came out, he gave a speech where he says, you know, I'm going to focus on the economy now, which is like the 30 millionth time he said that during his presidency. And so Boehner and all the others, they came out and they said, oh, well, we've heard this whole same old tired rhetoric before, and these aren't phony scandals, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, there's some truth to that, but here's what you would have done if you were an effective leader. He says he's going to focus on the economy, but I have a bill that would do X, Y, and Z, that would do these things, and we could get jobs started immediately, and we would do this. And so I'm putting this before Congress because I'm heeding the call of Barack Obama. I want to get the economy working again, and the only way we can do that effectively is to engage in my plan, the John Boehner plan of whatever the heck it is, and we're going to do these things, and now you control the agenda. And then you go out and you give speeches on it every single day, and you get it done. And then Obama's like, well, I think that's a terrible plan. Now you're having a conversation about the plan, right? Okay, so then he proposes something, and you go back and forth, and if you're, you know, really good like Newt Gingrich, you muscle him down, and you get your plan enacted. And then eventually, you know, 10 years down the road, the other guy takes credit for what you did. But whatever, if you have a party that actually supports you, that doesn't happen because the party says, no, we did that, instead of running away from it. The Republican Party is embarrassed that they cut, you know, welfare, so they don't want to talk about that. Bill Clinton said, yeah, I reduced welfare, you know. This is Nixon to China moment. But that's what you would do. That's how you would engage in that conversation, and you would take some leadership, and then you would show that your party actually matters and is part of the debate, rather than sitting back shooting spitballs, which is what Sanders
is
doing.
I think there's two flaws with your analysis, Tex. The first one is you're assuming that Boehner has a spine, which I'm fairly confident he is an invertebrate.
Well,
and
yeah,
two,
we can't assume our current leadership is going to do that. Is what it, where my
well, and that's
is.
The other
so
thing.
Number two,
Obama has been focusing on the economy. Obama's been focusing on the economy for 5 years. He's focused on it so much, he's almost completely destroyed it. Maybe if we could get Obama to focus less on the economy and let us fix it, then things might be okay. But look at what he's doing, right? For political purposes, he's delaying the employer mandate requirement of his PAC Act, which, again, is an illegitimate bill, which was a Senate bill, and it's a revenue bill, so it's supposed to be a House bill, so Boehner could actually destroy it with one fell swoop. But if he did that, that wouldn't give him 47 opportunities to make a rhetorical stand against Obamacare.
But you don't let him dominate the conversation and say that I'm
right,
going to focus on the thing, and then the conversation, you have your own thing, and now your agenda is what's being discussed and talked about. That's how you interject.
But I don't think they.
But I don't think
Yeah, they don't want an agenda. What they want to do is want to bitch and moan about his agenda rhetorically while funding it, and that's what I think that we really have to understand. See, there's a lot of quote conservative Republican voters out there.
Yeah,
a lot of Republican voters out there somehow think that these guys are good. I mean, they still talk fondly about Paul Ryan. This is the douchebag that got up and gave an impassioned speech about TARP back when Bush was the moron in charge. And this is the same moron who was selling us just last week the idea that the NSA prison program is good for us. But people still talk fondly about him as a conservative. Look at how they talked about Rick Santorum. Oh, he's a good guy. He's pro-life. He's pro-marriage. This is the kind of guy we want as president. He's horrible as a – I mean, he might be a good guy. He might be a good Catholic, a good father. That's all wonderful stuff. That doesn't qualify you to be president. Yeah, that doesn't qualify you to be president. So I think what we need to do is really wake up. Instead of, you know, hanging out in our own little ghettos, talking to each other or bitching about the same things that we bitch about to each other, we grassroots have to reach out to other Republican-leaning voters or even people who've given up voting completely who used to vote Republican and get them back involved to really focus on true conservatives as opposed to these faux conservatives who, you know, talk the rhetoric. And the other thing is that, you know, somehow people are being lulled into this belief that somehow if you were for the Constitution, like Rand Paul or Justin Amash, right, you're weak on national security. You're going to allow terrorists to take over the country and kill us. And this libertarian, like Christie was saying, this libertarian trend is dangerous. Really? What's so friggin' dangerous about the fact that the Founding Fathers gave us this in the time of war? What's so dangerous about preserving our liberty? Because if we're going to give all that up, what's the point? Why even bother talking about these parties? Why even bother talking about saving the country? So I think that people really need to understand and not let their fear. You are the one who has to reach out to them. Fox News isn't going to do it. You know, they're not going to do it themselves going around the internet. You're going to have to get to them, and you're going to have to tell them, look, here's the deal. We're facing an existential threat in this country. The statists are taking over. They're going to send us into more conflicts abroad, and they're going to build more police state infrastructure here. They're going to undermine the country and destroy our economy. The only way we can prevent that from happening is to have some real opposition, and these rules that the Republicans put in place that were funded by the Mitt Romney campaign and Karl Rove last year in Tampa make it impossible for us authentic conservatives to have a voice in this party. Please call your committee men, your committee woman, your committee chair, and tell them to change these rules back so that we can actually have a fair and open election and nominate the best candidate, not only the one who has the ability to win by communicating with the people and actually drawing the independent votes away from the Democrats, but one who actually stands up for the principles in which we believe. Someone who thinks that the Fourth Amendment is still the supreme law of the land, and until it's amended appropriately through Article 5, you don't get to pass laws that violate it. The Second Amendment still stands. So these things are important, and these things are important to most Americans, only they get bogged down and confused by all the rhetoric between, you know, the parties and
John Boehner's little speeches about Snowden being a traitor and all this kind of crap. And I think that that's our job. That's what it means to be grassroots, not just to go out and knock on doors for candidates. For goodness sake, half these candidates are telling you that their Tea Party candidates aren't. They're liars like Marco Rubio. Our job is to wake up the sleeping giant that's the American public who actually believes the same things that we do. That's your job. That's what you have to do now. Let's go, Chris. We haven't heard from him in a while, and then back to Texas, and then we'll go to Paul for his final thoughts.
Yeah, that was all you guys were right on. One of the things I wanted to comment to Paul on was, you know, on a larger scale, these corporations that are backing these, you know, whatever party they're backing or both parties, you know, we're not going to be impacting them. I mean, there's this, you know, globalist, international, you know, the next series of wars that everybody's going to get in and make fortunes off of. You know, they're where they're at. We have to focus where the power's at, and the power's in the people. It's in the vote, it's in the purse string. These corporations, they don't care. You know, most of them are fascists. You know, they're corporatism. You know, we are in a stage of a whole nother world. You know, the drug companies, you know, using the federal government to force people to take, you know, inoculations. I mean, it's just, it's never ending. So, you know, they're as much as the enemy as the communists that are in control of our country right now. We just have to, and as far as new businesses rising up, you know, that's not going to happen much until the economy changes, you know, if it does. So really what Rex was talking about was a very key thing, and that is education. Get your eyes off of the news of the day and the media and focus on things that matter. Understand the bigger picture of what's going on around the world. You know, very few people want to understand, you know, like when you go across the globe and you look at everything that Russia's doing and involved in and how that ties back to what's going on in the Middle East and with the U.S. and the energy, you know, and all these different things. All these things are at play, and people have the opportunity, whatever their goal is in the Middle East, total chaos, shutting down, you know, pipelines are being shut down because Libya's on fire. You know, all these things that are happening, you know, you got to look at who has to gain from this stuff. And then you begin to understand, okay, Saudi Arabia. Okay, now who's Saudi Arabia in bed with in our government? And you can follow the money and you realize, oh, okay, it don't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. That's where the money goes. So what we have to do is we have to get people in there in 2014 and back good candidates who are more liberty-minded candidates. I know we use that term, you know, liberty, conservative, whatever. I'm just talking about people who give a crap about our country instead of every other country in the world. You know, if there's anything, I remember before I really knew much about Dr. Paul and I started researching him, and he used to talk about, he goes, what's wrong with trading with other companies, other countries, instead of bombing them? And I remember hearing that one time, you know, when I was still trying to get my mind wrapped around, you know, his philosophy across the world, and in this one interview, he was talking about, look at Vietnam. You know, we lost 100,000 lives. We, you know, we broke the financial back of our country. We had the whole 60s, you know, revolution, you know, all over that stupid war. And he goes, now we trade with them. And it was just, you know, it was one of those aha moments. And this is the thing that what's happening is, you know, when you talk about spreading democracy, you know, I study a lot of foreign news sources, and I read a lot of comments, and it is amazing how people view America. Because, you know, when you look at the Second World War and the Korean War, America saved the world from fascism, from totalitarianism, from Hitler. We were the heroes of the world. We created a wealth and prosperity coming out of the Second World War. You know, that money and that outreach and charities went around the world. We were the most giving people in the world. We had a moral authority in the world. Along comes, you know, 9/11 and Bush's spread democracy through the Middle East, and all we've done is spread chaos. You know, pretty soon all these things are going to come home to roost, and we need people who have brains, who can sit down and go, what's more important, toppling another dictator and backing people that we're going to fight in another country or we already fight, or taking care of people here, taking care of our economy, our families, our Americans. I mean, why are we importing 11-plus million people? You know, people aren't, you know, they're not having kids. We kill 3,500 babies a day through abortion. Our inner cities are falling apart. You look at Detroit, you know, and that used to be one of the most prosperous per capita cities in the country. You look at these dynamics that are going on, and I don't care if you're left, right, R, or D. When you look at America right now, we're up the frickin' crick, and it isn't getting better. And these people that are in power, which a lot of them are coming up for election in 2014, especially in the House, you know, 33 senators and a lot of House members, you know, you have the opportunity to get these people out of here. What is Palin doing? Who is she backing? Who is Newt looking at? Who are the people that we respect? Who is Ron Paul backing? Who are the senators and the representatives that we respect, like whether it's Amash or Rand Paul, who are they backing? And get that information out to people, because that's the next generation of people who have the potential to seize back some more power in the House and Senate. Because you look at the damage that Boehner and Cantor and Graham and McCain have done, not just to our party but to this country. Those people have to go. And that's where we need to focus. Those are real things that we can do, you know, outside of the RNC meeting coming up. Anyway, I got a little roll there, but that's my input.
That was good. Those are all valid points, and I think they all tie into changing these rules, because how are you going to motivate grassroots to work on getting conservative candidates, especially to replace entrenched interests like Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and all these other losers who just keep getting reelected because of name recognition? Or even in the case where you said, who's Rand backing? Well, keep in mind, Rand is the junior senator from Kentucky, and the party leader is the senior senator from Kentucky. So technically, Rand is backing Mitch McConnell. But let's face
right.
it, that's just because he has to. Otherwise, he loses all his chairmanships, and he'll become ineffective and useless. You know,
right.
But there is a guy running against McConnell, so, you know, back him. But why are
or
the grassroots going to... Yeah, but why are the grassroots going to bother working our asses off for Republicans if this party is going to crap all over us and not even let us pick the top of the ticket? You know damn well that even if you have good conservative gains in 2014, right, you're going to lose them all in 2016 with the guy that they're going to pick, whether it's you know, Bush Rubio or some other crappy, you know, rhino like that. So that's what makes these rules so important. So I think your points are all valid, and it's understanding that we have to have multiple strategies and multiple focuses. But work on the things you can. You're not going to prevent this neocon foreign policy from invading the next country. You're not going to prevent that. You might be able to prevent them from passing an amnesty bill for all the illegals. You might be able to get them to start working on securing the border. You can definitely get them to change the RNC rules. So focus on the things you can actually do something about. And you need a force multiplier, so don't just talk to the same 10 people that you already know agree with you. Go find 10 others and get them talk to 10 others and get them awake and tell them this is important. You got to do this now or 2016 is lost. So I think that's really the important thing. We're almost out of time, gentlemen, so why don't we go to Paul for his final thoughts, and then we'll go back to Tex.
It sounds like, is Blog Talk Radio still working?
Yeah?
Yeah.
My wife
I'm,
keeps
I'm
saying to people.
I'm not on the website right now. I'm outside.
Depends on what you mean
because
by
my
working.
Wife just said that people are refreshing, they're trying to get sound back, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
you know,
anyway,
we can always get a copy from the NSA.
There you go. The only thing that I was pondering over my head here while Chris was on his rant was, you know, why didn't Obama go to Detroit? Why didn't he go to Detroit? That he's where we wouldn't let flounder. Well, he doesn't have any young impressionable minds that he can lie to continue his ways. He's known now. He could not go to Detroit. And I give a final thought on the corporation things. As we think about, you know, the industrial war complex. You know, that notion of the neocons, you know, the industrial war complex has got to keep money coming from the government, because that's the only thing that buys it, that builds it, right? And they've got to keep selling it somewhere, and it's got to get consumed somewhere. So until we have a different world, that industrial complex is going to continue to have skirmishes and wars somewhere that keep that machine funded and new and refreshed. Now, that's bad in the sense that we've got to have that there's going to be wars, but it's good in the sense that if we don't have it, then we're dead. Right? So there's a two-edged sword there, and I don't know what it's just a bad conundrum all the way around. From the grassroots side, it is all about talking to as many people as you can. I get people pissing me off, but I tend to piss off at least three people a day, which is, in my opinion, pretty good, right? Because the other two or three that I talk to don't get pissed off. They kind of go, let me think about that. And that's good. If you can get people to actually scratch their head and think about it rather than rail against it, then you're doing it good. If you just piss them off and have them kind of go about their way and think you're an ass, a moron, then you're not doing it good. So while I kind of wear a sharp name, in the persona world, you can't do that, in real life. You've really got to be reasonable with people, talk to them in a way that they understand, and think about what's concerning them and how the conservative values will help them and what they worry about. Don't just rail on what they think they like, because all that's going to do is continue the divide. So I'll close it with that.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul. No, those are all very good, valid points. I would say that as far as the military-industrial complex goes, we're not going to shut it off overnight, but we definitely need to get rid of that swinging door of creating a market for weaponry, when in fact we need weaponry in order to defend ourselves. But we don't have to create markets, because the only market for these kinds of advanced weapons is new theaters of war, as opposed to a defensive tool designed to keep the enemies at bay, and if they decide to get serious about it and come at us, that we can win and defeat them decisively. But talking to people the way you mentioned it is absolutely spot on. It's been a while since we've chatted with you, so thanks for calling in today, and we'll see you around the internet, and hopefully we can get more people interested in these rules meetings coming up August 14th. Thanks, Paul.
Sure enough.
All right, Chris, we got 15 minutes of live air left. So I know you just finished your rant. Do you want to wrap it up and then we'll
go to text? I just wanted to add some encouragement to the issues of our never-ending wars. In the last 4, 5, 6, 7 months, whether it's NSA or it's they've been pushing to go into Syria for a long time based on lies. You know, while they're backing the bad guys who are eating other people's organs and all this stuff. And the public is pushing back in general. And so that's good. And when you look at the vote that on Amash's bill, he got a lot of votes. He was very close to actually getting that amendment passed through. So there is a change in the way people are looking at the Middle East, with the Arab Spring and all this is all wonderful and they all want democracy. Look, they're rising up. They all worship me, the Obama. Right. Look, now that I'm in power, democracy's spreading. Bush couldn't do it with war, and I'm going to do it with my presence and my Nobel Peace Prize. And now everybody's turning on the brotherhood, whether you look at Tunisia or you look at Egypt or Libya. They're all on fire, man. These people are going, we don't want the brotherhood in here. We don't want Nazi Germany controlling our lives. And that's really what it is. And so there is a different view in the public about what is going on around the world, what our role is. A lot of people are frustrated, and they're starting to push back. And the polls show it. The votes are starting to show it. So I see some encouragement there. They would have had us at war in Syria a lot sooner, and they actually pulled back funding. And Obama had to get up there and go, we really don't know where these weapons are. They had to backtrack. Otherwise, they would have already had us in war. So that's encouraging on one point. All right, that's just something I wanted to throw in there.
That's spot on. You're right. That's I think it's very spot on. And why don't we see if Tex wants to follow up on that and enlighten us with how he sees this going. Tex?
Well, I was going to point out, this is kind of following up on something we talked about a few minutes ago, but, it goes back to where are the American people,
in politics now? How are they viewing government? Of course, government is at historic levels of unpopularity, and that shouldn't really be a surprise because government's not listening to the people. It's trying to dictate to the people and tell them that we know what you need, we know what's in your best interest. And, you know, the interesting thing about that Christie speech is he said that there is this libertarian strain on both the right and the left. Kind of interesting, right? Which means that on both sides of the aisle, and this gets back to the false left-right paradigm, growing numbers of people are disillusioned with the trend towards statism. Now, he didn't mention that, but that's why people are interested in what we call libertarianism, which would be a more local, limited government. So I think that's interesting. But there also was a poll that was done recently where they asked people if, you know, do you want to throw the bums out, including your own congressman? Now, most people are always for, you know, throw the bums out, but don't throw out my congressman because my congressman is good. I hate Congress, but I like my congressman, right? And that's always been the conceit of Washington. But for the first time, they asked this poll recently, and 57% of people or, you know, basically 60% said that, yeah, throw them all out, including my congressman. He sucks. And I think it's interesting because I think there's a level of disillusionment in the country now with government and the direction that it's going because government has gotten away for too long with forcing their view on everyone. And now people are not, you know, listening to a passive media system like television was. With television, you can't do anything. You just sit there and you listen to it, and you have to receive the message. You can't do anything. But now things are far more interactive, and people are finding a voice. They're uniting communities of people, and they're realizing that, hey, other people do think what I think. And I think government is slow at adapting to that. And so, you know, of course, their initial response is, let's record all of this and find out who disagrees. But, you know, so I think that the American people are finding their voice, and there's this widespread disillusionment with the direction that government's going. And so my hope is that we end up with one party that is sort of the party of the status quo, which is likely to be the Democrat Party, and then one party that goes through some sort of transformation, likely the Republican Party, that becomes a party that is more about personal freedom, classical liberalism, political economic freedom, versus state control. And then you have an actual two-party system that's actually functioning. And I think if you had that, whatever becomes the party of more limited government would become the dominant party in the country, because I'm seeing it on both the right and the left. So there's hope. It just looks very bleak right now.
Well, Tex, I think it always looks bleak before it gets better, and it'll likely get worse first, but I think you're right. Should we have a two-party system? I would argue no. We don't buy that bullshit anything else. Free markets, we want competition. We know that it creates the highest and best use, and you know that the best rises to the top and has to fight to stay there as opposed to having the ability to keep everybody else from achieving that level of success by over-regulating them. So I think that's also true for our political factions, and I think that we should also have the ability to have candidates who don't belong to any faction because maybe there's a better person out there who doesn't agree with any of the party philosophies. But the sad fact is that we've got a two-party system. I mean, that's what we've got. So, you know, any kind of delusion that we don't, any kind of hope that we're not going to have one in the next few election cycles, that's a fantasy. And one of the things about having principles is you don't give up your principles, but if you want to actually get anything done, you're going to have to deal with the world as it is, not as you wish it would be. One of the fundamental problems that the Democratic Socialists and the Democrat Party have always had is that they've got this utopian vision of mankind and of the world, and so they want to implement this beautiful vision, and people keep falling for it, yet they can never deliver. It always goes in the opposite direction, and it never lasts because it is impractical and it's not real. The Republicans have adopted the same stupid idea, except that they want to be the ones to implement it as opposed to the others. Well, first thing to do that, you have to actually win, which they can't because they're trying to sell you the same spiel that the Democrats are. And number two, it's basic sales 101. Differences sell. Similarities don't. I mean, if the number one brand is satisfying its customers with its product
You are not going to beat the number one brand by offering the same thing that they have. People will buy the number one brand. You have to offer something different. You either got to do the same thing for less, or you got to do something better quality-wise. And so that's what the Republicans are facing. Do they really want to be Democrat light? Because that's the case. It's loss after loss after loss, and we're going to just hand the country over to the Democrat socialists, and you can just kiss your ass goodbye. Or we can have an alternate brand, something that says something different, something that appeals to a broad audience, which is what Tex was just talking about. Some, you know, on the civil liberty side, if Republicans would actually stick to the Constitution, they could attract a lot of disaffected, quote, liberals. And you don't have to be strong on civil liberties at the expense of national security. I mean, that is such a lie, because guess what? All of these same neocon war hawks that want to blow up the world are the same ones that want to keep your southern border wide open for invasion by terrorists, drug dealers, child traffickers, disease, an economic locust horde that's just going to destroy your welfare system and the country along with it. So, you know, don't give me this crap that they're for national security. What they are for is war and for control of us here at home. Neither one of these things creates a strong defense. In fact, if you look at what they've done with the military, they've practically demoralized our military. Now, people join the military out of a sense of conviction, duty, and honor. And what happens? They realize that they're being used for wrong purposes. The force is overextended, and morale is dropping like a brick, and competency is dropping. And if you have a diminished warrior capacity, you're going to lose your country. So if you want to build up that morale, then let's have a strong national defense, not an imperialist, aggressive army. And let's have a real national defense that looks out for the interests of Americans first. You know, but to do that, you need to take over one of the parties. And the only one that you really got a shot at is the dead GOP. And that opportunity is coming up August 14th at the RNC meeting in Boston. So what you need to do is get on to your members, give them a call, shoot them an email, send them a Twitter, go visit their office, but let them know that unless they open up the rules so that the grassroots has a voice in picking the direction the party is going as far as platform and candidates, we're not going to do the work. And point the finger to what happened in 2012. You know, why did they lose to a guy who got so many less votes than he did when he was popular in 2008? They lost to him because the guy they put up was the only person in the world who was worse than Barack Obama. Barack Obama should have been the easiest candidate in history to defeat. But Karl Rove managed to find you the one guy that couldn't do it. And that's exactly what they're going to do again, because they think they know better. Let them know you don't know better. You don't know what we want. You're not listening to us. And you better start listening to us, or we're going to go. And if we go, you're going to die. Maybe you'll still get paid in the next couple of election cycles. But then the party's going to have such a record of loss that who would even bother contributing to it? And then it's dead. And then it's just the Democrats. Now, maybe you guys, you know, these losers can hop over the Democrat Party and get paid over there. But, you know, again, the theater needs to have at least controlled opposition. And you can't even have controlled opposition if no one belongs to your party. And that's where the Republican Party is going. It's bleeding out membership because it treats us like crap. So what you need to do is reach out to people and tell them, look, this is the chance. You know, you're out there posting Rand Paul 2016, Rand Cruz 2016, and all this kind of, yeah, that's a pipe dream. Under these rules, that's never going to happen. So if you really are focused on 2016, even though you should be focused on 2014 first, but if you're really thinking about 2016, then you better be focused on August 14th in Boston, because until you change these rules, there is no 2016. It's going to be a Democrat victory. You might as well either join the socialists or you know, give up, because you're not going to win. So get these rules changed. These rules do not allow the grassroots to pick the candidate. They force the candidate on us from up top. And that is the exact problem we have in Washington, D.C. Why would you want to replicate it in the so-called conservative / libertarian party? So the reason that guys like Chris Christie and John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio and Paul Ryan are so have such a hard-on for beating up on the, you know, extreme dangerous libertarian wing of the party is because they know that that is appealing to people outside of the Republican Party, and it's appealing to a lot of Republicans who are just sick of the
you know, neocon war hawk crap that we can't afford in neither blood nor treasure. And so they're launching an Alinsky preemptive strike. What we need to do is take the high ground, get the voice out there, get other people engaged, hammer these RNC members and tell them to fix the rules. And just keep in mind what Rand Paul responded to the Chris Christie video we played at the beginning. His office said, if Governor Christie believes the constitutional rights and the privacy of all Americans is esoteric, he either needs a new dictionary or he needs to talk to more Americans, because a great number of them are concerned about the dramatic overreach of our government in recent years. Defending America and fighting terrorism is the concern of all Americans, especially Senator Paul, but it can and must be done in keeping with our Constitution and while protecting the freedoms that make America exceptional. That's something a lot of people can get behind. That's the kind of broad coalition that can not only win elections, but can actually right the mess that's going on in this country. And it's up to you to make it happen. We can't do it alone. Rand Paul can't do it alone. It takes all of us working together. Get informed, get busy, get others informed. Let's fix these rules at this RNC meeting. Contact Morton Blackwell, contact Mark Willis, find out what they're doing, and tell your committee men and as many others as you can to get behind those initiatives. Because if you don't do it now, this party's going to stay dead. If you don't do it now, 2014 will be moderate and 2016 will be an absolute slaughter, and this country will eventually disappear from the face of the earth. It's up to you. It's a great opportunity. We are winning. It is tough. Now's not the time to give up. Now's the time to fight harder. We're here to give you all the information that we can and give you all the help. Thanks for your support. Thanks for sharing the show, and thanks for listening. This is Tex and Rex, signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.